He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash. What was it, Andy?
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
It Welcome to the Wolvermate spooktacular Halloween episode.
Oh! Are we allowed to do the monster voices then? I did ask.
No.
But the soundboard that we've got, the mixer, it does have a monster voice button.
I know. I just don't want you to come edit this and then mess and really go, we have to record again.
Yeah, thankfully we've not got to that point yet, but this could be the day, Andy. I can see.
Just leave the button.
We've got the options of male, female, robot, monster, baby, and elder. I like that they grouped up like the gender ones together, and then You've got the age ones, and in the middle of both of those, you've got robot and monster. It's an interesting categorization that they've got, and that it makes the baby and elder feel like afterthoughts.
Well, it's the Always Sunny joke about when someone gets old enough, they stop being a man or a woman and they're just an old person.
That's a good point. You're either a baby, a person with their own identity, or an old person.
Yeah.
Or maybe a robot or a monster. Somewhere along the way, are we not all robots or monsters, Andy? We either abide by the rules that society has put out to us, or we push back against that. We become truly unique and the world sees us as monsters.
Well, they always say there's two wolves inside everyone, and one of them's a robot, and one of them's a monster.
This is War with a Mate. It's the podcast in which we swear to God we talk about the campaign for North Africa. Occasionally we'll mention other fun things, like age.
So we've, Upstage 3, turn 2.
Almost done. The only thing left is the truck convoy
phase.
Pesky
trucks.
Truck day. I hate truck day. But
and it's happening more and more often.
It is. It felt like it was just yesterday that we did truck day. We're now in a cycle, I've realised, of we have truck day, air day, and
land
then
day.
Movement.
Yeah.
We've got an upstage down to 3 sessions.
It's
fast.
It's good. Yeah.
That's genuinely good work. We should give ourselves a pat on the back. There's nothing spooky about today.
No.
Get rid of the spooktacular stuff. It's not even that scary. Although, today some scary things did happen.
Yeah, this was a hell of a movement stage, I think, for both of us.
Very minimal, big-scale combat.
Some fun skirmishes.
Some decisive combat.
So, I guess we'll start. I went first, so
let's
my
go
movement,
from that.
Other than one little cluster, I basically pulled everyone back. So, City Briani, where I had the 4th... which was about an upstage away from getting into combat with you, just distance-wise.
Yeah.
I've decided to pull them back towards my stuff, closer to Mesa Matru, to try and take advantage of some terrain, because the place I was trying to hold was sort of 5 or 6 hexes wide.
Yeah.
And I had 2 divisions. So I've pulled back to a place where it's 2 hexes between the coast and the like escarpments and the sort of rough terrain you don't want to be moving stuff through. So I think I'm going to hold there just as you've got your rumbling wall of stuff moving forwards.
It was, yeah, it was there for a little while, that one upstage, and I knew it would put the fear of God into you, and I'm glad I did it, because now you have moved further east.
Yes.
So that was a good payoff. You moved them east, but you moved someone further west,
yes,
didn't you, Andy?
Well, I guess I moved the 2nd New Zealand who were going to the front back to Mesa Matru.
Uh-huh.
And the 7th pulled back to the supply depot they've been nearby.
Which I found out last upstage. Full of supplies, that thing.
Oh, yeah.
That supply dump is rife. It is just absolutely jam-packed full of goodies.
Although it's getting drained soon.
No, well, I guess yes, it is, but by me.
Yeah.
Your 7th can't carry all that stuff.
No, but luckily, because it's the upstage 3, I'm going to do all the store expenditure out of the supply dump.
No.
So their trucks can all be full.
Did not think about that. I would have liked to be there for this.
It's a nice little timing thing.
Yeah, no, I can see that now. I'm going to have to go back over the numbers on those supply dumps and see how much there was store-wise. Because I did quite like that for me.
I think it was in the hundreds.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely in the hundreds.
Yeah.
And hundreds is sort of what I need.
Ah, Well, they're getting eaten up.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I needed that.
So the 7th pulled back a bit, and then, yes, what you were alluding to, my guys who were behind enemy lines, they really went for it this turn.
Some spooky ghouls.
Yes. So they were being attacked by, like, 5 units of guns, so they pulled out of that, looped around behind them, and attacked the fort they'd come from. Not fort, the town they'd come from.
Yes, where there were more guns waiting for them.
Yes, won a fight there.
Won a fight? I don't know about that.
You retreated, so yes.
You lost some men.
Yeah, but won the fight.
How many did you lose again?
10%.
10%, yeah.
Which, when you have, like, 6 stow points, is...
significant.
Yeah.
I lost 5%, I think, but I was forced to retreat.
Yes.
So they pushed further away. They moved up to a crossroad nearby.
Which cleared the way for the King's Royal Rifle Company to do a suicide mission.
Yes.
They went miles behind enemy lines, pushed themselves to minus 24 out of 26 coherence.
Yes.
But they got to one of your airfields.
They did. Matuba.
Yeah.
They did. They got to one of my airfields, which held a diverse series of squadrons. There were some fighters, there were some bombers, and all of them are now defunct because you went in and you butchered all of those SGSUs. I had horrifying flashbacks of Fort Maddalena. It's like in the film Halloween, where you get the flashback to Michael Myers killing his sister.
I'll have to take your word for it.
Yeah, it's just like that. Michael Myers finds his sister at the Mortuba airfield and kills her and the rest of the SGSUs in cold blood. And then he comes back to Hadfield years later and tries to do the same thing again.
Kills more SGSUs.
But when he gets back there, he finds that no one other than Rommel is there. And he kills them.
Nice to kill Rommel on a vacation.
No, Rommel wins. He's what? Sort of the Dr. Loomis.
Rommel's more... he's a shifty escape guy. He's not...
maybe he's the shape. Maybe he's Michael Myers.
That'd be weird. That'd be a weird piece of lore.
I could see Rommel being a bit of a Michael Myers type character.
Really?
Yeah. On the game map, yeah, he just sort of appears. Doodle!
He does... yeah, okay.
Just trust me on that. You've not seen the films.
Yeah, I don't know enough of Halloween to argue with you, but I'm pretty sure you're wrong.
Nah, that's lore accurate. It's in the third one, I think. So, yeah, you did do that. You butchered my SGSUs, and I was not pleased about that. Yeah. Not one jot.
So, at the end of my movement, I had one thing on map C, which is the 7th. Most of my stuff is on map D. I did have 2 things on map B. So I had more of a presence on
my side of map C than you did on actual map C, which is the middle point.
Yes.
It's meant to be the middle ground. It's meant to be the common ground. It's the center of the game.
It's the front.
And you have one group there, and it's the 7th.
Yes.
And they suffered breakdowns as well, 33%. Of their tanks broke down.
Yes, and then 10%. They lost, I think, 5 or 6 tanks overall.
That's not nothing.
It's a lot, actually, yeah.
So they are not doing well. Yes, they may have supplies, but those tanks will never see a repair yard.
Oh, no. Well, I still also haven't done my repair stuff.
However, if I get to them, they will see a repair yard. They will make their way to Tobruk, where they will be fixed by... maybe end of turn 4. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be taking those tanks. Because the truck bandits have wreaked havoc on me for far too long. And today, I sought vengeance.
Yes, so that was the end of my movement, and then you got in there.
I took decisive action is what I did. First and foremost, I moved forces to tackle this problem. I moved the Libyan Tank Command, which is sort of a shell unit at the moment. It's the divisional headquarters with some tanks to help garrison it. And I sent them on the warpath to try and take on...
the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers.
Yes. And no, it was the other ones.
The ones who got wiped out were the King's Royal. The Northumberland Fusiliers were the ones...
yes. So... Yes, so they tackled the RNF, and in that battle there was a bit of a, you know, exchange of blows. I lost nothing, I believe, in that one.
Yeah, and I lost 10%, which is just a toe point for what they have.
Yes. So, bit of a skirmish, some blows.
Big toe point.
Yeah, an important one, a vital one for your survival.
Well, I'm just going to say it, because they have free toe.
Now or then?
At max.
Right, okay. And they don't have that anymore.
No, because I sent them off forward, not taking into account they are my elite infantry.
I see, and you've done this with them. You turned them into what the long-range desert group should be and have failed to become.
Yeah, this is a sort of flash forward to what the SAS were doing.
So they stuck around, they got into that fight. Meanwhile, your guys who went really balls to the wall, they ended up being attacked by the Derna garrison, who marched their way further down south, and they were bigger than I realised. They had quite a bit more might to them than I expected. We're talking, you know, double-digit toe points, which is good.
Yeah.
Which meant that when that fight came about, because of their ridiculously bad cohesion level, they surrendered on contact with enemy. So the Derna garrison took them all. Those truck bandits, half of the truck bandits, are officially gone. I've got them. They're over. It's done. Yeah. The reign of terror is over.
They had two toe points left, so you just captured 200 guys who I picture being fairly smug.
Evil dies tonight. That's what they say in one of the Halloween films. So that's what I did. I struck back. I reclaimed the trucks that remain in their possession. They are now mine. They're back. Back in my rightful ownership.
Have you looked at what you got?
No, I bet it's nothing. I bet it's absolute pittance. I bet it's complete crap at this point. It's just trucks full of sand and the bodies of SGSUs.
And because they went so far, there's a lot of broken down trucks.
I've got no doubt that a lot of them are broken down. But it's not about the trucks I got back. It's about the trucks I stopped you having.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's like a spite thing.
I mean, you can have sort of 7 trucks for your entire Air Force.
7 trucks? That's like twice the size of my usual convoys. I do not manage my convoys well.
That's a big load of supplies coming to the front.
Yeah, well, you talk a big talk, but I have a million trucks coming from Tripoli next turn. I believe it's the first or second op stage of turn 3. I've got like a bazillion trucks.
Are they, because they also arrived with the black shirts. Are those trucks full of supplies, or have you left some empty so they can have guys?
Some of them are empty just because of my poor planning at the start of the game and not knowing how it works.
Oh, okay.
So, yes.
No, you left them empty so you can mechanize.
Sorry, are you trying to give me an attaboy here?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I've realized if I big you up, then when I beat you, it makes me look more impressive.
Oh, I see. I thought this was a way to try it.
I lose and it looks less bad because I've bigged you up.
So you want to take a sort of moral high ground, or you want to boost your own ego?
Yes, to both.
What's your favourite scary movie?
Scary movie?
That's not a scary movie though, is it? It's a parody.
I've not watched a lot of scary movies. Probably Scream.
Yeah, well, it's definitely mine. Scream's definitely mine. Big fan of the Scream franchise.
Yeah, we watched all of them.
Last year?
Yeah, for our Halloween movie season.
Yeah, we try to do that each year. We're aiming to do Halloween this year, but we're running out of time really to watch them. We'll watch them after Halloween at this point.
To be fair, last year we watched most of the Scream things in November.
That's a good point. Yeah, we did. The new one's coming out soon.
Yeah.
Comes out February.
Excited for it.
We'll have to go see that. Oh, I love those films. Very good films. I've went as Ghostface for Halloween parties a few times because it's just a very easy costume. It's very easy to move around in. Not like when I dressed as the Cat in the Hat.
Or the Mandalorian.
Yeah, the Mandalorian was a very cool costume. I really liked doing that one. I had the cool helmet, the metal helmet. I got an outfit, like the actual suit was less spectacular. That was a sort of like cheap plastic and the zipper broke.
And it came with a baby Grogu. And do you want to tell the fans what you did with your ward that you were protecting?
So it didn't come with it. I bought him separately. And it was to attend a... This one was actually not a Halloween night. This was a Disney-themed night at a club. And I went to this event with a Baby Yoda Grogu slung around me the way the Mandalorian does.
Because they go together because he loves him so much.
You bastard. So I went to this event. And when I was there... drinks were flowing. It's a nightclub. All's, you know, party atmosphere. So I may have at one point, when somewhat socially lubricated, traded Grogu, Baby Yoda, the child, for 4 tabs.
That's cigarettes.
Yeah, I traded him for less than a quarter of a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, you have to be careful saying tabs, because we...
That's a good point. Not tabs of acid or any other sort of tab. Cigarettes. Yeah. I traded Grogu for 4 cigarettes. No, I definitely wouldn't be doing any form of hallucinogenic drug in a nightclub. I'm fine with my cigarettes and alcohol. I believe it was the Beatles that sung that one.
And so then they sort of went back on him by getting really into psychedelics.
Yeah. If anything, they were actually very, very strong on the psychedelics. But not me, no. I got rid of Baby Yoda, but I think we went on a bit of a tangent there. Yeah. I was trying to keep with the Halloween theme. Instead, we've determined that I will happily trade any form of alien for a few cigarettes at a nightclub if the time calls for it.
You're just like Captain Kirk.
It's the prime directive.
Yeah.
So back to the game itself. The real question to hand now is not what I did was morally grey or not. It's what happens now, because moved my guys very far east after that.
Yeah. Well, we sort of...
I moved a wall.
Yeah, we've dealt with my attack behind your lines. You attacked both of them. And then your actual divisions...
They moved east. Every single division that is not currently stationed in a settlement, as in a major city, they moved east. They moved east hard as well.
You also sort of fanned out around the 7th. I'm sure you'll put the picture on the Instagram, but they are surrounded.
I think I'm going to use that as the picture for this week, because the 7th are now... they're stuck. They are in the middle of nowhere at a supply dump. They have no allies anywhere near that aren't cut off by one of my divisions. And I have 5 divisions that are all horseshoed around them. And there's no way out of there.
They can retreat and have like a sort of nightmare, retreat through the desert. But yeah, they're sort of... Well, they're not sort of. They're very isolated from supplies. This supply dump will keep them going through a turn, at least in terms of movement for fuel and water evaporation and all that stuff, but they have to use that turn to get back to my supply lines.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult one for them to get out of, because if they want to try and push any further into my lines, they're going to have to retreat for a while first and group back up with some other units. They can't fight in their current state.
They've got 1 or 2 fights in them, I'd say, but with 5 divisions around them, that's not 1 or 2 fights, that's 5 fights every op stage.
I think what it is, it's 2 divisions fight them in their weakened state, and the rest of them just march past.
No, that'd be interesting to see how that plays out, because they do have a secret weapon I haven't used yet.
What possible secret weapon? Secret? What secret weapon do they have? Is it hunting wabbits?
It's the 11th Hussars, who... haven't been involved in combat yet and have some nasty tricks up their sleeve.
I mean, the nasty tricks can only be boiled down to the mechanics of the game, which is being able to attack
and
or defend.
Move.
And move, I guess, yes. If you do another truck bandit thing, I'm not going to be happy, Andy. Don't you? If you do another truck bandit I have prepared for that, though.
I'm going to give you a little sense of these guys.
Okay, let's hear it.
They have the same movement as the long-range desert group.
Right.
As a combat unit.
Okay.
And I believe they have 5 and 6 for close assault and defense.
Right, so they are actually very scary.
Yes.
Okay. Noted. Don't like the sound of that at all. I'll bear that in mind, because that's unnerving. I've got some black shirts that are quite scary, but not... Yeah, they're not huge in numbers. How many tour points are we talking? roughly?
They have 6 toe points.
Right, okay.
Out of a maximum 8, because they start low. Sorry, I overdid it. 2 and 3, but...
That's still quite... That's a force to be reckoned with.
With the CPA, yeah.
I can tackle that. That's fine. I've got enough divisions. I'll blow them up.
Because I'm sort of weighing up re-splintering the 7th.
Hmm. But you want to have them back to the 7th and friends?
Yeah, because sort of the thing I've said, you could lock them down with 2 divisions and march past them. But if there's like 5 or 6 things there, they are all a threat. It might change the way that happens.
Possibly.
Because together they're an incredibly dangerous division.
Well, what you lose is...
I'd say division to division, they beat any of your divisions, probably.
Maybe one-on-one, yeah.
I've not looked at the game stats, but historically, for sure.
Oh, yeah, historically, I think there's definitely precedent for it. You've got the Desert Rats combined with a group that are, by the sounds of it, very, very capable with close assault.
Yeah.
But I do have a secret weapon of my own.
Ooh.
You've seen them, though. They are snaking their way along map D.
Yes, now this is the big bit for your movement. This is really a concern for me, is that... is it the Sahara Detachment?
It is. The Saharan Detachment have continued their expedition further east, and they've made it deeper into map D. Breakdown to be determined. I haven't rolled my breakdown at the end of today's session, so I need to figure that out. However, they've made it further along. They're now halfway... they're pretty much smack bang in the middle of map D.
Yeah.
They're about halfway across, and they're halfway down, and they're continuing along a trail to move further east, which will soon take them onto map E, if I so choose.
Yes, or you can sort of burn some coherence and strike up or anywhere on the north sort of coast road, which is making a lot of stuff vulnerable for me. So they're sort of doing the job my truck bandits were doing, but with the sort of weight to carry it, or like, they can fight divisions, probably.
They have actual combat readiness. A division, I think, might be a little bit out of their realistic capability. I think they've got some good strength to them. I'm just having a little look at them now. And, I mean, their 2 points are... I mean, they're pretty formidable. They've got some nasty stuff when it comes to close assault and close defense. Defense especially, we're looking at scores of 7. And it's not a single toe point.
Defense is 7?
Yes. Wow. And their assault is comparable. And again, it's not a single toe point for some of these. So, yeah, you're looking at some real capability. And if they get into a fight with someone, again, probably not a division. I think that's probably beyond their pay grade.
Yeah.
But they can take on another group of their size, and they have the combat capability to really do some damage.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how that pans out. I'm torn between 2 ideas, which I'm not going to get into really, as to what I'm going to do with them. But both of them, of course, negative for you.
I assumed it'd be weird if we're doing the other way around. I think initiative for turn 3 is going to be a huge decider.
It is, because that will determine whether or not your 7th can zip on out of there before I attack them. And it will also determine whether or not you can do whatever you're going to do along that northern road without my intervention.
Yeah.
Because I have guys that are on the cusp of being on that road, and one of them is a tank battalion. Tank division for the most part.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of tanks I can just start sweeping along that north road. It's just a case of who's going to back them up.
Yeah.
That's the real
crux. Because you need
crux.
To combine arms them.
Yeah. I need to have a look at what... room I have in some of those groups for extra infantry to join up.
Yeah.
Because I can split off, in theory, some of the scarier parts of the Black Shirts and stick them in with some tanks.
Yeah.
And that makes for a nightmare for people like you. It's a bit of a Taken thing. I'm trying to drop in some horror references, but I went with Taken there, which isn't really horror. It talks about the
it
horrors.
It is if you're his daughter.
Well, yeah, if you're his daughter, or I guess if you...
were they Albanian gangsters?
I think... yeah, I'm pretty sure they're Albanian in that film. They're in France. I think the people he encounters at first are Albanian, and his daughter loves you too, which is probably the most unrealistic part of that film. Remember when U2 made you download the album on Apple?
iTunes. Maybe one of the worst moves in music history, just to make people resent.
One underhanded move by both U2 and Apple.
Yeah.
Apple, I would expect it of. You know, they're big business. They're big tech. Whereas they're the Big Apple, if anything. New York. Fantastic New York impression there.
Well, the idea of being like everyone gets the album for free is like fine if they get a choice whether to download it or not.
Yeah, one day you just woke up with it, and I ended up listening to the song Volcano like 14 times when I used to walk from work back to my place, because for some reason when my phone went offline, if I ran out of data, it would only have that saved. So I would just listen to that one song. The rest of the album wouldn't be maintained on my phone, but that one song would. So, yeah. In the end, I kind of like the song. I haven't listened to it in about 10 years now, and that's probably for the best.
Speaking of phones, the pictures might be better quality because you've got a new phone, so hopefully the Instagram will be a bit...
I do, and you know what? I've got a bone to pick with people. This could well have been a common ground. I have been getting stick all day because I got a phone case for my new phone. My old phone, by the way, it was dying constantly. It was an iPhone 8, I think, and I've had it since, like, COVID. So the thing was old. It was dying inside of an hour if I wasn't charging it, like, constantly. It was on life support. I had a power bank at all times in my pocket, ready to keep it charged. I got another phone now. It's another old iPhone, so it's still, you know, years behind the models that are out now. But I got
post-COVID.
It's post-COVID. And I got a flip phone case. It's one of the, like, the leather-bound flip phone cases.
Cards and stuff.
You can put your cards in it, like your debit card, your ID, your Tesco club card. And I keep on getting ridiculed for this. I don't know why. People are like, oh, you've got this, you know, dad phone case.
It is a dad phone case, though.
Well, I mean, I suppose so, but I like it. I think it's cool.
I'm sure you do.
I like it. I think it's really good. It's going to protect my phone. It makes it look kind of cool and slick. And yeah, see, that's the fucking problem, Andy. I keep on saying it and I get that reaction. People act like I've done something wrong here.
No, they're just not letting you compliment yourself.
I should be able to compliment myself. If you know what, Andy, if I can't have people saying nice things about me, hopefully we can find people saying interesting things about the podcast. How about that?
Yeah, let's escape from reality into the email.
Let's dip into the mailbag, and I'm going to bring up the mail on my phone. How about that? There we go. Look at that. I've got my cards in there. I think that's cool. And it's got a magnetic thing there, so it clips shut when I want it to. So that's good. And also, there's a little thing here where I can put money in.
If you had
any. If I had any money. All my money's digital. I don't need any paper money anymore. But what I do need is to read out this email from Jake. And the email reads, "Hello, Andy and James. I am Jake, writing from New York." New York, just made a reference. New York. That is possibly the best New York impression you'll ever hear. The Big Apple. I'm really sorry. And have been a listener as of only a few weeks ago, and have been tearing through your episodes whilst at work. At the time of writing, I'm on episode 38, hoping to hear this read out when I catch up. Well, here you go, Jake. Here's your moment. You guys are great, and I love, as an American, hearing the cool things you Brits have and say, and how you say them. judging by the fact that I've just tried to do a New York impression several times and failed horribly, Jake, maybe you'll be taking that back. Hard to say. I googled what a Huel is after hearing so much about it, and wish I never had, to be honest. Every time Huel was said, I could only picture Huel from Better Call Saul. And I know you get the reference based on previously mentioned Chicanery. Yes, I absolutely do. Very good program, love it. Instead of Huel from the show, I now see a 35-gram protein plant-based drink, which is not as funny. Well, the 35-gram protein one is actually the black edition. It's the black edition. The normal one, I think, is only 20 grams of protein. And it's the normal one is the one they include in meal deals at Sainsbury's. Not the black edition.
I wish he hadn't ruined that for himself, because I love the idea of just picturing Yul from Breaking Bad and Beckle Saul.
He thinks that we're sat here drinking Huel Babineau from the Breaking Bad universe. On the topic of pronunciation, in one of your early episodes, you pronounced, I guess this is part of the problem, isn't it? Juice as juice, which is D-U-C-E. Pronounce it as juice, D-E-U-C-E. Which, unless you are the baby from Family Guy, is incorrect. It is correctly pronounced Duce. And I believe you owe Big Mus an apology. Game-related, I had a question about cavalry. Is there mention of it at all? It was outdated after the war became mechanized, but as every bit of help was needed, they were used for supply and reconnaissance, and in the German army, about 80% of their transport was equestrian, and by the end of the war, the army had about 500% more horses than at the start. That's impressive and odd. And by means we can only assume were Nazi horse orgies to keep up with the demand. And that explains the odd.
There is one cavalry unit, I believe, but it's not a... It's a camel cavalry unit.
Yes. There are a few that are cavalry in name.
Yes.
But I don't think they actually have horses.
Well, basically, a lot of historic cavalry regiments became tank regiments because they sort of... One became obsolete at the same time the other sort of appeared.
Yes. So there are cavalry units. I'm not sure. I mean, I can't speak to the history. It's very much your wheelhouse, Andy. Can't speak to how many horses were in the North African campaign specifically. But there was definitely camels.
Haven't looked it up, but yeah.
We're not
sure.
Seems
like a
the...
bad idea.
Yeah, I can't imagine horses would have a great time out there. I mean, the camels, we don't really understand them in the context of the game anyway.
Also, I guess kind of importantly, everything that's happening in this war is being shipped from Europe. And like, if you have a limited number of supply ships, why would you fill one with horses?
Why would you fill planes with dead camels, Andy? The game tells you to do that as well.
We still don't have an answer for that, so I guess don't put horses in ships, don't put dead camels in planes.
Don't put dead camels anywhere, just leave them where they are. They live and die in the desert. I don't think you should be moving them.
Okay. Leave them there.
In a game of logistics, I figure there would be some mention. I am a fan of grand strategy and wargaming, mostly spent on Hearts of Iron 4. I highly recommend it. It's a computer role-playing, computer game role-playing any country during World War II that is very supply, number, and percentage-based. Lastly, I think you guys would get some answers for your camels, or there we go, if you just got on top of them. Attached is an image of Italian camelry, as it was really called. In the 1930s occupation of Somaliland. I couldn't find much of a presence in the North African campaign of this camelry, but if y'all's dig up something, that might make a good history bit. Anyways, I apologize for the length. Please continue the good work and stay subtle, humble, and brave. I like the little abbreviation there, the initialism, S-S-H-A-B.
Ooh.
Sashab.
Getting that out. We're busy.
Oh, yeah. We're busy people. We can't see the full thing. I will be here for the long run, Jake.
And you know what, Jake? I'm adding it to my list. We will have a history of camels in North Africa at one point.
Well, I think it's the finale of the whole thing, isn't it? When we finally figure out the camels. That's where this whole thing ends.
Yeah.
It's not when we finish the game. It's when we figure out the camels. Because that will take years longer than the actual gameplay.
Gameplay
will take decades anyway. Jake did actually follow up with a few other cool bits. He sent over a video that mentions the 28th Maori.
Yes, you really should look that up. The video is called Italian World War II Veterans Talk About 28th Maori Battalion Soldiers. It's sort of a very real glimpse of the impact.
Yeah, you see the fear in this man's eyes.
Yeah. And there's mention in it of the Maori problem, as if it's was a significant thing that everyone was thinking about.
Yeah, some like big nebulous threat to existence. Yeah. They also talk about the bayonet charge, where they would get charged and stabbed with these bayonets and then shot point blank afterwards with the bayonet still in them.
Yeah.
Which is just a terrifying thing, to one, be stabbed and then be blown apart afterwards. Napoleon blown apart, if anything. Hey. That's another war reference. I've moved away from Halloween. I've went deep into history. Jake's also mentioned a book recommendation, which is Mussolini's War by John Gooch. And he's parenthesized, ha-ha, after the surname Gooch. Very sophomoric humor there, Jake, but I love it. I can't deny I'm really a big fan of stuff like that. So that warms my heart. But thank you for the email there, Jake. Very detailed and really makes me reflect on how much we used to talk about Huel. We don't talk about Huel enough these days, Andy. You noticed that?
We went back last week.
We did, but I feel like even then, maybe this is the Huel Renaissance.
No.
Wouldn't that be spooky? Would that scare you?
Huel returning from the grave.
Yeah, I think that would scare you. So, well, Jake, thank you very much. On to the next, which is from Monty.
It is. Hi, James and Andy. My name is Monty. Started to listen to your podcast nearly a month ago, and I'm up to episode 38 at the time of writing this.
Dedication.
I'm an Amazon delivery driver in the US of A, and I have lots of time to just listen to things while I drive. I've heard you all mentioned you do CFNA on weekdays after work, and was wondering what sort of professions both of you do. Obviously, if it's too personal, you can ignore this, but I was curious what occupies the rest of your time when not playing D&D or Campaign for North Africa. Won't get too specific, but software development, writing code.
Yeah, I'm an astronaut.
Yeah, they'll believe that.
Yeah, no, probably not. I've done quite a few things. I've worked in sales. I've worked in finance. I've done a whole bunch of things all over the place. Quite the sporadic mix. No astronaut stuff yet. And now I work in healthcare. I work in mental health services, which it's a bit of a far cry from my pastime, but that's the job. That's what the day to day looks like.
James also mentioned the crummy weather in the UK, overcast with threats of rain. Happened to be on a boat today. However, I enjoy clouds and rain a lot. Maybe I should move to the UK. If you like clouds and rain, come on over. We got plenty to go around. I like a good boat as well. You a boat fan?
I don't mind a boat. I've been on a ferry a few times. I've got the ferry from Dover to France.
Same.
That's a good one.
Done the Amsterdam Newcastle one.
Haven't done that one. Haven't done that one.
I just slept for like 16 hours.
Ah, that's a... Yeah. I bet that was a good one then.
I was coming back from a fun little trip. I've been in it for the long haul, so if you're still doing this for the next 50 to 60 years, I'll be right there with you. So you're not allowed to quit. Stay subtle, humble and brave. And don't make sure you don't get lost in the deserts of your mind. Cheers, Monty.
Monty got both the catchphrases in there. That's good. That's a tough one to get in. I didn't think one person could do it. That's why me and Andy distribute it evenly. But very nicely done. And when it comes to the long haul, yeah, we're in this too. I mean, yeah. We're coming up to a year now.
We're sort of committed.
We can't really back out now.
Yeah, we've got too many of you interested.
And Monty followed up.
Yeah. Hi, y'all. I don't mean to bombard you with emails on the same day, but I am partway through episode 41, and you got an email about asking about doing a live show, and y'all talked about how it is a fun idea, but you have no idea how you'd do it. Well, I propose that instead of a live show, you should just have a live stream going while you play, so people can pop in and see what you're up to. Easy setup, just turn on the camera and start your stream, just a thought. Feel free to either read or not. I decided to read. Stay subtle, humble, and brave, you guys. Monty. Yeah, good idea, Monty. We've been talking about this a bit. There's some logistical challenges, but we do want to be able to stream to you guys. We just need sort of cameras and equipment and figure out the geometry of this room.
Yeah, because when it comes to something live, I think it'll be a lot of fun. Whether it's a live in-person thing or whether it's a live stream, both of them have logistical challenges. The most part of that is trying to figure out how we keep this as something that's going to be engaging during that, because I think we've talked about it a lot, But I think when you actually see what a play session of this looks like, a lot of it is us pondering decisions over the board, filling out spreadsheets, and just repeating that until the turn sort of comes to an end.
I guess so, it would be good to give people a sense of what a play session looks like.
It would be a very different play session. It would be a very, a very theatrical one. We'd have to really find a way to work around that, fluff it up a bit. It's something we've talked about quite a few times now, and we are looking at how to do that. In short, we have plans for it. We just need to figure out how to do that. We need to get the equipment for it, because we do not have the equipment to do that. We don't have a way to record that reliably, a good quality recording of it. So we're looking at all the ways we can put something like that together. As for the live show,
it's a fun pipe dream.
Yes,
we'll
get the Warlimit live show.
Maybe no one will come, but we'll do one at some point.
We'll do one somewhere. We just need to figure out where that'll be. I think Chicago at this point it's looking like, because wow, a lot of Chicagoans
who also like doing field trips. So
yeah, so they'd happily come along.
Yeah.
So Chicago, if you want us there, you just let us know. That's where we'll go. As for the live stream, it'll be right here, I would imagine, where we're doing this recording. And we'll figure it out. We've got plans for it, Mondi. We want to diversify how we do this. We think it'll be a lot of fun. We just need to figure that out, because we've got the grips with the game now. We just need to figure out everything else we're doing.
Yes.
We're only a year in. We've got to mix this up.
We've got recording down pretty much, although we've had some nightmares.
Yeah, we say that, and we've had some real challenges, but that's part of the fun. We never claim to be experts at this. We're just the ones doing it. Well, some fantastic mail. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Monty. And everyone else who sent some stuff in. We've got some great emails still in the pipeline there. Some that will be their own individual dedicated mailbag session for them, because they are lengthy. But if anyone wants to send something in, you can do at info@warwithamate.co.uk. There is the Instagram, which is just warwithamate, and the web form on the website does work.
I've tested it again, and we did get one through.
Warwithamate's
working again.
Warwithamate.co.uk is the website. That's where you can send that. We've got some bits and pieces on there in terms of pictures as well. We'll read it all out. If you send an email, we will get to it. We're doing this for 20-odd years. Yep. We will get to it.
And you made a vow in episode 9.
I did.
Way to commit us.
Yeah. We're men of our word.
Love hearing from you. It's great stuff.
It is. It's great hearing from you, folk. Now we've unfortunately got to delve into something else, which is, the past.
Indeed.
So what are we delving into in the past? Because we left the 7th Armored Division sort of in the middle of nowhere, a bit like you did in the game.
Indeed.
A subtle dig.
We ran up to the 13th of September and the start of Graziani's offensive.
The 13th of September?
Yes.
It wasn't a Friday, was it?
It actually was, yeah.
Oh, spooky! There we go. See, it's all Halloween themed.
I actually did look that up last week. An ill-fated start. So instead of continuing with the 7th, we'll pick them up next week. I thought it would be a good chance to jump into sort of what each side had at the beginning of this.
Okay, a bit of a holistic breakdown.
Yes. But we are starting with starting with two quotes this time.
Oh, double whammy.
Never has a military operation been undertaken so much against the will of the commanders. That's a quote from Mussolini's son-in-law about this. And it is not the number of men which causes me anxiety, but their weapons, equipped with limited and very old pieces of artillery, almost lacking anti-tank and anti-aircraft weapons. It is useless to send more thousands of men if we cannot supply them the indispensable requirements to move and fight. And that's a quote from Balbo.
Ah, he's rearing his head again, is he?
He is. He's popping up again.
From all the way back in Chicago.
Yeah. So, on the 13th of September 1940, the Italians marched with 6 infantry divisions, accompanied by a battalion of 200 tanks, a force of 250,000 men and arms, supported by 400 guns, and roughly 190 fighter planes.
That's what I'm looking at.
Standing against them, 30,000 British soldiers with half the tanks and only 48 fighter planes.
Yep, that sounds familiar. We've seen this.
Oh, yes. But if we take a step behind the numbers, we get a very different picture, which explains Graziani's reluctance to push forward.
Okay.
So we'll start off with the officers. We'll start with Italy. Warning, this did just turn into a sort of roast of Italy's army. But so yeah, the Italian officers are described as being arrogant and dismissive of their own men. The army on the whole is badly trained. Italy's troops had done fairly well in Spain against the Republicans and in Ethiopia, but morale was mixed, to say the least. Also, their divisions were undermanned because of previous conflicts. So what they did was they reduced the definition of a division from 3 regiments to 2 so that they could have the same amount of divisions on paper.
That doesn't make it better. That's shuffling around. Yes. So it looks better on the books. That's not making you more formidable.
There's a lot of this in the Italian preparation of a sort of, if we look like we can win a war, we'll win a war regardless of the reality.
Sorry, so Graziani was going with the fake it till you make it mentality to win a war.
No, Graziani was going with the, I don't want to do this, I shouldn't do this, stop telling me to do this, I can't win.
Ah, well, you know, guy knew what was right.
Yeah. So, just to go in on your black shirts, for instance, they were well equipped to a certain extent. They had fancy uniforms, they looked good. But they also ignored the realities of war in favor of like romanticized heroic narratives. It made them tactically inflexible. For example, they also favored bayonet charges, a move enjoyed by the 28th Maori, but they kept doing them at the wrong times. Because they're sort of...
Oh dear, that's a very tragic visual.
A German field marshal described the Italian troops as such after the war. They seemed to have a garrison mentality, and in fact, much of their training was done in garrison, a totally inappropriate practice for exposing troops to the hardships of the battlefield. Their training remained superficial without reaching a satisfactory level. So yeah, just not well trained and not trained for the environment they're fighting in.
Which is a massive negative, because yeah. It's a desert. You kind of need to be ready for the environment or it will kill you.
Yeah. He also points out there's a lack of contact between officers and the men. For instance, officers are enjoying like lavish rations while men are often starving or on minimal rations, which is just tremendously bad for morale.
Which explains a little bit about why all of my units have such terrible morale when yes. The game starts.
Yeah. The issues they have are further compounded by bad equipment. For example, their armored cars are from 1909, so pre-World War. Like, last week I was going, the 7th had old equipment. It was from World War One. They're pre-World War One.
That's so bad. I mean, we've talked about the bad Italian tanks quite a few times.
Yeah, the L3 tankettes, which... You should look these up because you can see pictures of people standing next to these tanks and they look like sort of dodgem cars. Like, they'd fit one or two people. The people would have to lie down in them.
What a terrifyingly claustrophobic situation.
It's such a bad piece of equipment. They had 12mm thick armour compared to the 80mm thick armour of British Matilda 2 tanks.
80, like 80.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. So
12.
Vastly different.
Yeah. This is partially a strategic issue from before the war, where the Italians massively underestimated the role tanks were going to play in warfare.
It's one of those weird things where you look back at it now, and from my perspective, it's like, how did you underestimate how important tanks would be? But, Yeah, it's easy to look at things in hindsight, but that just seems like such a fundamentally bad thing.
Yeah, I think hindsight gives us a lot, but also a bit of foresight would have helped them as well, because pretty much every other nation got ready for this. They did have another tank, the M11. This had a rotating machine gun on top, but the tank gun itself, the main cannon, was limited to pointing the direction the tank was pointing.
Yes, we mentioned this before. Yeah, which it's like Michael Keaton's Batman.
Yes,
he can only rotate and look in a different direction if his whole body moves. And that's not great for a tank, especially in the desert.
Yeah, it sort of defeats the point. It's just a gun on a car.
Yeah.
Much more so than a normal tank.
Yeah, if you can't orient it in a particular direction, it's so difficult to maneuver.
Speaking of the other guns, they're short on anti-tank guns and they're short on aircraft guns. They have World War One era artillery or older, which is also lacking ammo, and very importantly, they don't have enough radio sets to coordinate across the desert, and the radio sets they do have can't be used in a vehicle. They have to stop, set them up, send the messages, and then load them back onto vehicles, which makes coordinating across a vast space like a desert unreasonably difficult.
That explains why I keep making bad decisions.
Yeah. Richard Berg really captured that and applied it to you specifically.
It's art imitating life imitating art.
An example of their guns just being badly designed. They have a 47mm anti-tank gun, but it doesn't have, you know, typically guns of this, if you see them, they have the metal sheet at the front.
Yeah, like a sort of a guard.
They're called splinter sheets. These guns didn't have them, so there's multiple reports of explosions going off in front of the guns, and then British troops wandering in and capturing an intact gun with the entire crew around it being dead.
Wow. So they're getting killed by their own weapons going off.
Yes, all firing back and just not having the protection.
Oh, I see. So yeah, when they're getting shot back out, they're just getting torn apart.
Yeah.
And the guns have survived that blast because they're much more durable than flesh.
Yes. Which brings us to the air. Graziani had 84 modern bombers and 114 fighters, with a further 113 aircraft, which would be considered obsolete. It did have the Fiat 42 fighter.
Yes, I've got them, yeah.
Yeah, which was highly maneuverable for planes of the time. Still outmatched by British Hurricanes, though. So, just... Yeah, in total, they had 363 aircraft in North Africa at the start of the war, of which 306 were operational, and 57 were training planes. And then they had a further 179 planes that were unserviceable and unusable, but were taking up resources.
We should have a look at that, actually, before next play session and see how that compares to the starting planes that we all get.
Yeah, well, I've been wanting to do a comparison with this sort of stuff and what we get in the game, but I don't want to look too closely at your stuff, so I'm going to space that out.
Yeah, we do need to do that at some point, though, to see how fun, Richard Burgess had keeping... to fact or fiction with this.
Yeah.
How much of it is balanced for the mechanics of a game? Or, you know, has he just went completely lore accurate?
Yes.
And it's just functionally the same war. I imagine it's the latter based on everything I know.
Oh, yeah. This military effort's further been hampered by Mussolini over the last decade, who's been selling off their newly created aircraft and weapons that would have been a match for British stuff to countries sort of like Spain and Turkey. And he's been buying surplus equipment from the collapse of the Austro-Hungarian Empire to equip his own troops with. So he could have had better stuff.
He was selling it.
Yes. While in his head preparing for this glorious war, which is just like disconnected from reality. Like another example of it, they don't have enough trucks for their army, so they're borrowing trucks from private businesses so they can hold lavish parades to show the populace how powerful their military is.
I actually don't understand the logistical decision there, because I understand wanting to try and like boost morale, but that will eventually fail you.
Yeah.
Like, you can have all the parades you want, but if you then lose...
Yeah.
It was for nothing. I don't actually understand why you would do that.
And these parades would have been expensive to put on, most likely. But this is the thing, it's like aesthetics versus like being functional. Because Mussolini's got all these grand ambitions to rebuild the Roman Empire and stuff, but he seems to have no concept of what actually goes into fighting a war, which makes sense on a certain level because he was a journalist who sort of wormed his way up and just didn't listen to his advisors. Another example of a Mussolini fuck up is when it comes to your navy and your supply situation. Italy wasn't ready for Mussolini's declaration of war because he puts this out on Radio Rome, which is like his mouthpiece, and also, how he puts all this stuff out. He puts it out on that, which is being listened to by British intelligence and other things. So he announces this offensive before the offensive happens. So the British are like, oh, cool, we're about to be attacked.
This just, it seems like sabotage of his own efforts here.
Yeah, I mean, even further, he didn't warn his merchant fleet, so a third of his merchant fleet is in British ports when he declares war on Britain. So those ships are just immediately captured and not let out and used by the Brit. Like, he loses a third of his merchant fleet, like, for supplies and logistics, the moment he declares war.
So he would have known that, though. Like, why?
We will be having a Mussolini episode. I think a lot of it will be my quest to understand these decisions.
Was the man just having some sort of crisis of self and just thought, well, if I look good, maybe I'll just succeed?
I think it's sort of fake it till you make it, which sort of works if you're trying to like get a job in marketing or something. It doesn't work if you're trying to run a nation and rebuild the Roman Empire. So as well as losing a third of his merchant fleet, his navy has no aircraft powers, aircraft carriers. They're short on fuel and manpower. All of their submarines are being run by junior staff for some reason.
That's an odd choice.
Yeah, and the British had broken all their codes. So not having a functional navy fucks their supply situation, as you know, because they have to ship the supplies to Benghazi or Tobruk, or worse, to Tripoli.
Yes, right, finally, I feel vindicated.
Drive hundreds of miles back eastwards.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
One estimate puts the Italian trucks and this supply effort using 60% of its fuel to get supplies to the front.
That is probably correct, yes.
Yeah. So Richard Biggs probably nailed that. And then you've got the first move of the war, just to build on this ineptitude. On the 10th of September, they move forward and they do a massive artillery bombardment on empty positions the British had left days ago.
Right, so they're also just getting the attacks
wrong.
They have
limited ammo and they waste it on a huge artillery bombardment on no one.
Right, careful, because this is feeling a little bit too close to home.
There's also a story of the 11th Hussars watching the Maletti division try to navigate through the desert and getting lost, and the 11th Hussars were apparently like overlooking them too far to be shot back at, just laughing at them as they're like trying to navigate with like compasses and incorrect maps.
Yeah, this is, I feel, you know what, I can see why you made some of these decisions. I think it's a smart guy would make these errors. I think that's completely normal.
Well, we'll do a quote from Rommel's chief of staff to sum up the Italian situation. The Italian soldier was at a disadvantage compared with us as far as weapons, equipment, and other imponderables were concerned. He was neither equipped nor prepared to fight a war against European opponents armed with modern weapons, because the fascist regime had neglected the armed forces. The army in particular was at a disadvantage in respect to tanks, anti-tanks, artillery, anti-aircraft, and defences.
You just rattled all of them off. That's everything. Yeah.
A considerable portion of the army's guns was composed of booty collected from the collapse of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Their wireless posts were not in position to transmit or receive while on the move. They had no field kitchens, and their rations were insufficient. Their industry was not equipped to meet the requirements of armed forces during a war of a long duration. I saw one thing saying that if from 1935 they'd doubled their production like instantly that year, they wouldn't have actually been ready for the war they were going to fight until 1943, which you might know is the end of this. They just didn't have the industrial base.
But they had booty. You just said they had booty.
Oh, yeah, from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. That's run a bit. We'll do the British side of this next week.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to hear if that's as terrifyingly mishandled. But I have a funny feeling, based on how things go, probably not.
I'd say it's weird. The Italians had all the men and no preparation. The British had very few men and prepped very well.
I'm interested to see if it's lore accurate when we delve back on all of this after, I think maybe after the scenario's finished.
Yeah.
We'll be able to look back and see how these units compare to historical accuracy.
I'm getting a sense, though, that the plane numbers feel right.
Yes.
I've not directly compared them, but they feel right. I've not looked at the breakdowns of your division, but by the sounds of it, your divisions might be smaller than my full divisions.
Possibly.
Even though I think, obviously, I still have less. I have 30,000 men to a quarter of a million. But I wonder if that's why the 7th performed well, sort of division versus the black shirts.
Yeah, maybe the divisions were quality versus quantity.
Yeah.
But also, I guess, quantity. The actual divisions themselves may have been smaller in the number of divisions, but the divisions were made up of more men, and also just more formidable men who are well prepared and have radios.
Yeah. I think it's just this, it is this thing of like, one, the quote of Mussolini of like, I need a few hundred dead bodies so I can negotiate. He just didn't take the war seriously despite everyone telling him. And also this thing of aesthetics versus reality. Of like, if we look shiny enough and we have enough divisions on paper, we'll get what we want.
It is a complete disconnect from reality.
Yeah.
And it costs so much, so many lives.
Well, yeah. Well, you said I need a few hundred dead men to negotiate, and 500,000 Italians died because of that.
it's terrifying looking back, and I guess not even just looking back. I mean, it's rife across the world through history, even now. These decisions made by people who just seem wildly short-sighted.
Yes.
But are able to make those calls. And the just vast scale of tragedy on the back of that is just terrifying.
Yeah.
And it sort of snaps me out of the game sometimes when I'm like, oh God, this was just horrible.
Yeah.
This was just an awful series of events, and all orchestrated by awful people. And it's just avoidable, yeah. is the issue.
Well, I think an important part of that is from that quote by Rommel's chief of staff, is they're not prepared for war against a European opponent. They've been fighting in Ethiopia, doing the Libyan like, they've not been fighting a comparable
force ever.
They've been, like, doing colonial shit.
Yeah, it's not been military on military, or at least not comparable military. It's been completely outweighed, and when it comes to an actual war, like you say, he's not taking it seriously.
No.
I mean, how can you take it seriously when there's booty involved? Your associate booty? That's a reference that, if anyone can get that reference, I'd be genuinely impressed. It's I'm deep cut. But booty, Scooby-Doo and the Zombie Pirate Island, you know, Halloween theme. That's sort of scary.
That goes nicely into my common ground.
Is it which Scooby-Doo film is the best Scooby-Doo film?
No, it's much more demented than that.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess on the back of this, because you know what? When we started playing today, you can probably attest, I distributed a lot of vitriol in your direction after your truck bandits did what they did. But then I got one of the groups of truck bandits, so I felt a bit alleviated. Nonetheless, there is still the need for some common ground.
And now for something nicer. A little oasis in the war. It's time for some common ground. I'm trying the intro for common ground. I'm recording. Maybe.
So, for the uninitiated, and there shouldn't be any, everyone knows common ground, we're all here together, this is our common ground. This is where we get to our disconnect from reality, and then we put together all the pieces that make us all one entity. Like a cult.
Yeah, so we walk away.
We walk away all friends. We can keep on doing this every week if we do this at the end. So common ground, we find a topic that we have to agree on, and we alternate, which means, Andy, this week it's your suggestion for a common ground that we need to find.
Yes. We should be using science to make cryptids real.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Well, I guess first and foremost, it's sort of the point of common ground. We have to talk about this, otherwise the episode's done now. But secondly, I don't understand why you'd want to do this. That's mental.
Okay, I have two sort of options for how this would play out. I'll present, we'll see how you feel about both of them, or either of them.
Okay.
Option one. Cryptid Park, which I understand is based on, I'm basing this idea on Jurassic Park.
I'm glad you said
where everything went wrong. We'll get better fences.
Sorry, it wasn't the fences that were the issue. Sorry, I'm cutting you off. Continue. I disagree, but continue.
Okay, option two. Top secret multinational project where they make cryptids real in labs in secret. And then release them into the environments they claim to be in. So you take like a chimpanzee, you genetically modify it into Bigfoot, and then you secretly release it in the like Pacific Northwest. Or you like make a Loch Ness monster and sneak it into Loch Ness.
You're giving me a lot of what you can do with it, but you still haven't answered the why.
Cryptids are cool. It's Halloween. And we can harness science now to do great and terrible things.
So just because it's Halloween, you think it's fine to release monsters, actual monsters, into the wild? What happens then?
Then
they kill people, I presume.
Well, I was smiling myself picturing, have you seen those like Bigfoot hunting shows?
Yeah.
There's like one of them where the producers are sort of like sniggering behind their hands at like a guy walking through the woods looking for Bigfoot. And then an actual Bigfoot just tears out of the woods and just attacks them.
So you are making, just to clarify, vicious monsters. They are going to kill.
It's just going to be like a bigger upright gorilla, probably.
This one is.
For Bigfoot, yeah.
Yeah, for Bigfoot. And it is, again, I need you to actually acknowledge what I'm saying. It's going to kill people.
I mean, yeah, it's a highly dangerous animal.
It's not.
It'll make the world
choice.
A bit more magic.
It's your choice to make. Don't fucking throw the word magic into this. That's crazy.
Because people won't know where it came from. They'll just know Bigfoot's actually real. And they won't know it got released like 2 days ago.
They will.
No, it's a top secret project.
Who's running it, though?
It's a top-secret multinational project.
What do the other nations have to gain from this, apart from a few dead TV producers?
Advances in genetic science.
That TV producers don't have to die for science to advance.
That's just one scenario.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. The other one was a theme park where innocent people die again.
No, because we'll have good fences. Are you against us?
You said better fences. You didn't say anything about good fences.
Are you against us using science to make cryptids?
Right. That's a nuanced question. I'd want to be involved in the project. Yes.
Well, yeah, that's all of these common grounds where it's like we're going to live underground or whatever. It's like I'm in charge.
Yeah, like if I'm in charge of it, like would I want to be involved in producing a monster? Yes, but I would want to be involved in producing a monster in a sort of like, I'll bring it back around, Scooby-Doo. I want to be, Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed?
Vaguely.
It's the one where they make actual monsters. Jonathan Jacobo figures out how to do it. Seth Green's in it, and he's kind of a nerd, and And at one point, Scooby wears a turtleneck.
Okay.
I've given a very holistic overview of the film, but that's kind of a whimsical way for people to make monsters. Like, you've got the monsters, but no one's really dying.
Yeah, that's because it's Scooby-Doo.
They're terrorizing Coolsville, but I don't think there's a body count. Yeah, I'd be fine with those monsters.
It's a kids' movie.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Okay.
I want my spooky stuff to be spooky, but at the end of the day, it's like, oh, well, that was horrible, but I guess, you know, monsters were real for a little bit, but now we fixed it all because Scooby-Doo helped. I'm happy with that.
Like, you modify, like, a bonobo so it looks like an alien grey, and then you, like, leave its corpse in a fake UFO wreck.
Right, so again, the use of the word corpse. So, we're talking about things having to die for this project.
Look, I just want an incredibly elaborate, scientifically advanced, practical joke to make all the people who fought cryptids were real vindicated.
Okay, there's a twist on that, which I'm not opposed to.
Okay, we're getting there.
It plays into something, I think, a lot more insidious. Because it plays into this whole parading people who are clearly, you know, invested in something that they care about. They've went down a rabbit hole, and it's not always accurate. And I'm talking about the harmless ones. I'm talking about these people who are, you know, invested in the idea of Bigfoot. If they want to go out, if they want to go and try and find Bigfoot in the middle of the forest, more power to them. If people want to go and find the Loch Ness Monster, that's how they want to spend their weekend, that's a hobby. That's fine. I'm okay with that. If people want to bully these people and, you know, sort of spoil their hobby, I don't think that's very nice. I think you should be able to go off and find the Loch Ness Monster if you want to, and it's all about the journey, isn't it? That's fun.
Unless we actually have a Loch Ness Monster there.
I think you're looking at this from the wrong angle, because you pulled on an idea there, a thread that I'm happy to pull on with you, and it's these cynical people who exploit these adventurous souls. I think these exploitative people, they deserve to get some comeuppance.
Ripped apart by a genetically modified Bigfoot.
I think maybe you've got an idea in mind.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly the idea I have, but I'm trying to walk you back in my direction, Andy.
Okay.
I think these TV producers that we've mentioned, I don't know who they are. I don't imagine they're very successful because they're clearly predatory. I think they should have their comeuppance. They should encounter one of these real monsters. I don't think they should be brutally murdered by them, because then they can't feel the shame that they need to feel.
Okay.
But I feel like they need to feel embarrassed. They need to be scared out of their line of work. I think there's so many programs where they prey on people who, you know, are just trying to live their happy life. They just want to do their thing.
And the tone of all those shows is like, "Hard look at these idiots."
Exactly. It's, oh, these people are freaks. These people are losers. Let's poke fun at them.
What if they were right?
Yeah, what if they were right? What if we spin it round and we do a program where it's a sort of the behind-the-scenes thing, where it's sort of like the point where you'd usually have like someone dressing up in makeup and getting ready for the prank, but instead we're in the lab.
Yeah.
Making the monsters.
Yeah.
And then it's a case of, all right, so we know that these people are going to try and do a big gotcha thing on all of these, you know, individuals that are hunting Bigfoot. And then we release Bigfoot. And then the producers have to deal with an actual Bigfoot.
Yeah.
We need to put into the situation a safeguard. That means they're not going to be brutally murdered. Because this way, the people that are out there trying to fulfill their hobby, vindicated. They're happy. They've seen Bigfoot. The producers, terrified. Their whole worldview has been turned upside down. Monsters are real now. And I don't mean that from like a perception as reality thing. Monsters are real now. It's scary.
Yeah, we made them real.
Yeah, I made them real in this situation because I'm involved in the project. So I get the satisfaction of making a monster. And, you know, that's cool. And I wouldn't be opposed to that. I'm actually quite giddy at the thought. I'd really love to make a monster, Andy.
Okay, so I actually went too far. I should have just said, let's make cryptids real.
I think so. I think if you didn't try and justify it with the brutal murder of civilians, maybe I would have immediately been more on side.
Well, I guess we need to go on this journey.
We do. I think that's what That's what Halloween's about. Halloween is about making monsters real for a little bit, safely. It's not about people being murdered by monsters, because that's actually scary. And that you can't put that one back in the box. That lasts after Halloween.
Okay.
And this is just a day. This is Halloween right here, right now. You just get one of them a year. That's it. That's all it needs to be. One little day of fun.
I timed this well.
You did. And I think we have found a common ground. It's fine for monsters to be real sometimes, as long as you can put them back in the box at the end of the day. So at the end of that, we store them away, we cryo-freeze them, and we bring them out next year.
A sort of cryptid purge.
Cryo-cryptids.
Cryo-cryptid purge.
Yes, that's what we do. And that, Andy, that would be my favourite scary movie.
That would be an incredible B-movie series.
It's the X-Files.
It's reverse X-Files. It's if Mulder and Scully were like, not like, I want to believe. It's like, I want to make this work.
I want to make a monster. Go on, Scully, let's get into the lab.
Is it Mulder who's the skeptic?
No, Scully's the skeptic.
Yeah. So it's just Scully in a lab going, it won't work, and Mulder going, it will. And then he's right every episode as he makes a genetic monster.
Scully would really struggle to push back on that one.
Well, yeah, they're involved.
Yeah, at that point, they're kind of involved in the program as well. I don't know, I think it's, I'm not going to try and get into the X-Files. It's too long and I haven't seen the whole thing, so I'll not pretend to be an expert. But the only thing I am an expert on, Andy, is farewells.
So, goodbye. Thank you all for listening. And stay subtle, humble, and brave.
And watch out for those cryptids in the deserts of your mind. Because unfortunately, once a year, they're real.
And they're coming.
They're coming for all of us! Oh my god! No!